I live out of this world, far from the land. A lightkeeper, they ask. They shake my hand. It must be lonely out there. They do not understand. For rockbound by the tide, and free from the throng, sweet peace fills my breast the whole day long. Every window's wind whistle is a blackbird's nesting song.
Donal O'Sullivan, like his father before him, was a lighthouse keeper. He likes to read his father's poems, in which you can imagine the lightkeeper off duty, admiring the sea.
Dawn on Innistrahull, that's the most northerly station now. The moon shines on the Isle of Innistrahull, bejewelling nuptial-tinted herring gull. Mayfly dancing in the balmy air, and moth returning to its daylight lair. A shoal of herring breaking out at sea, sparkle like hoarfrost on an aspen tree. The snail arboreum with his watery glue, and bunch of pearlwort in a crystal dew. The flaming sun ascends o'er Kintyre's mull, throws out his arms, day breaks on Innistrahull.
From the calm at Innistrahull to the storms of February 2014 at Galleyhead, West Cork. Gerald Butler served as a lighthouse keeper for 21 years. He's now the attendant keeper at Galleyhead. He told us how storms like these were the bane of 19th century mariners, sparking fresh requests for light on the Irish coast.
They really did not know where they were, so they would have to come in close to the shore to try and identify the coastline. They needed huge space to be able to turn that sailing ship around and sail back out again. And they didn't always get that. So in stormy conditions like what we're experiencing at the minute, and maybe even not as bad, they would have to drop anchor and ride out the stormy conditions. And of course, there was a load of ships dragging their anchors and going up on the rocks. And on that night in 1871, when the Crescent City struck the Doolick Rock just west of us here, another ship dragged its anchors inside in Roscarbery Bay and was dragged up on the rocks. So in the one night, there were two ships lost here. And it was following the inquiry from that that this lighthouse was built.
Galleyhead Lighthouse, Galleyhead Lighthouse. This is Midnight Coast Guard Radio. Midnight Coast Guard Radio. Channel 671, copy.
Maritime logbooks had their many tragic entries, but the 200-year history of Irish Lights is also a litany of ships not sinking and mariners not drowning. The happy non-events that never make the news, all of them guided by a lighthouse beam in the darkness, safeguarded and maintained by generations of Irish lightkeepers. Now the lights are automated, so in this series we're making a compendium of lighthouse memories before they disappear. In this first episode of Lighthouse Stories, we're reliving the lightkeeper's day from dawn to dusk in the company of Gerald Butler and sound recordist Chris Watson. Gerald joined former colleagues at a recent gathering organised by the Commissioners of Irish Lights and the Hook Head Heritage Centre.
My name is Nicholas Tweedy, next lighthouse keeper. Joined the service in 1964. And left in 1990.
Frank Pelly, I was in the engineers, joined in 1971, retired in 2006 and took over then as consultant curator of the Bailey Lighthouse Museum and Archives.
My name is Gerald Butler. I was a lightkeeper from 1969 until made redundant by the engineers. And I have a book written, www.thelightkeeper.ie.
Plug it again.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm Ian Duff, ex-Scottish lighthouse keeper from 1974 to 1992, when the lights went automatic.
Jimmy Cullen, next lighthouse keeper, joined in 1970 and I left in 1989.
My name is Al Hamilton, joined the lighthouse service in 1968 and stayed there until 1994. And I come from a family of four generations of lighthouse keepers.
Beginning with the dawn part of Dawn to Dusk, Al remembered a morning lighthouse story set partially in outer space.
When I tell that to people nowadays, that I was using paraffin lights up until the 1970s, they almost refused to believe you, that technology was there. And I was on Rathlin East Lighthouse in July of 1969, operating a paraffin lamp to power the light, and in a station that had no connection to electricity, but did have a little generator that you would start just while TV viewing hours were on. And at 4 a.m. in July in 1969, and the date escapes me, Neil Armstrong was on the moon about to get out of his lunar lander to go for a walk. And I could hear on the radio that that was going to be televised, and I needed the TV on as soon as possible. So I went out at 4 a.m. to turn on the generator to power the television and watch Neil Armstrong taking his walk on the moon while I was looking after a paraffin lighthouse light. And I thought, what a difference in technologies. There's a man on the moon and I'm running a paraffin light with a wind-up clockwork mechanism to make the lens go around.
Okay, Neil, we can see you coming down the ladder now. Okay, Neil, we can see you coming down the ladder now.
Back on Earth, Jimmy Cullen was on the 6 to 10 shift, about to discover the zen of the perfect floor polish.
Well, I remember my first morning at the Bailey Lighthouse. The new recruit always got the 6 to 10 watch with the lighthouse keeper that was stationed there. And I remember, and I don't mind saying his name, Siney Scanlon was the assistant keeper. So I was duly called at 6 o'clock and had a cup of tea. And what am I going to do now? And he says, now he says we're going to wash and polish this floor. Now, this floor was like a mirror. It was just like a mirror. And he said, I want you to get this mop and this bucket. And he said, I'm going to show you how to wash your floor. And he duly did show me how to wash the floor and dry the floor. And then he duly showed me how to polish the floor. Well, it took 2 hours. And that was done every morning of every week, of every month, of every year at the Bailey Lighthouse. So you can imagine what that floor looked like. But you had to be shown how to wash it. And there was the right way and the wrong way.
That is correct, Jimmy. I remember being on Wicklow Head and Eugene Sullivan showed me how to use a mop.
Yeah.
There was a special way to mop a floor.
Yeah.
You kind of spun it around. Yeah. You didn't rub it exactly. Back and forth. You spun your mop.
Yeah. And you could literally see yourself on the floor. And it was done every day. That was my first experience, how to mop a floor.
Such discipline created what nowadays you might call a clean room, so that dust and dirt was kept from flying into the burning paraffin light. Frank Pelly remembered another man's call of duty.
A colleague of mine was sent out to the Fastnet to survey. It was the bucket at the end of the, down at the base of the tower was the means of going to the toilet, and he was sent out to survey how we were going to put in a flush toilet into it. Anyway, he did his work and went to bed, got up the following morning and nature called him, and there was no way that he was going to the bucket. So now the Fastnet is 9 miles out. So he went down the rocks and he did his business, and looking around, looking up at the tower, making sure no one was looking at him. He went to pull up his pants and out of the blue had a boat pulled around and they gave him a standing ovation.
The take two of the wind around the lighthouse, so back rather towards the cottages.
With Chris Watson as our recordist and Gerald kindly walking us through, we reenacted the lightkeeper's dawn to dusk in sound. Dawn having broken, it might be time for you to begin your watch, joining one of your colleagues and relieving another. Using a contact microphone, we can hear how your steps would vibrate through the building. Stepping out on the balcony, you'll find that the wind had freshened. So you might retreat to the shelter of the tower, listening to the wind play its whistling drone around the structures of the building.
Now in the base of the lighthouse. Once you're inside in the lighthouse, pretty much all lighthouses are similar in that you're just inside a round tower, and there's a spiral staircase going up the lighthouse. And on most lighthouses, the windows will always be facing north, south, east and west as you go up through it. What went on here now, when I was growing up here, we had an oil tank here in the bottom of the ground, and we had a pump, a hand pump, for pumping the oil up into the light. At that stage, it was a paraffin vapor burning light that we had up above, and we used to have to hand pump the oil up into a tank up on top for burning at night. This column coming down through the middle of the lighthouse, that's for a weight-driven clockwork motor that we had above in the top of the lighthouse. You had to go up to the lantern to winch up that weight that went down through this column. That weight rotated the lens that we'll see on top. As I say, that it used to take that a half an hour to go to the bottom. It had to be winched up every half hour. So it was a very labour-intensive light. This was went on nearly all of the lighthouses around the coast. That's how the lens were rotated. It's called a revolving light. Even though the light itself is stationary, the lens revolve around the light, and that's what carries the ray of light that sweeps across the ocean. And if you were a mariner, all you'd see is a flash, but this is how they were able to put a character into that light. Now, the character of the light is flashing 5 white every 20 seconds. 0.1 would be the duration of the flash. That what I've just read out there would be recorded on a book called the Admiralty List of Lights. So when the ship saw the 5 flashes at night, they referred to this book and knew they were off the galley head. To go east, they were looking for 2 flashes every 10 seconds from the old head of Kinsale. Or if they wanted to go west, they were looking for 1 flash every 5 seconds from the fastnet. That's the difference, and that's how coastal navigation evolved.
Mizzen Coast Guard, Galleyhead, Roger. Visibility here at the minute is 25 miles. Sky overhead is clear, and sea conditions are very, very rough. Wind is west-southwest, force 5. Over.
After a spot of lunch with the other keepers, you might come off watch and you might want to go for a look around. That's when you'd taste something on your lip. Salt. So it mustn't have been rain that was lashing the windows earlier. It was sea spray. If you were on a rock station like Skellig, you might stop for a listen to the raucous bird cries of razorbills, guillemots and kittiwakes. Nice to get out for a break, but were you ever off duty with those international oarsmen about?
My name is Seamus O'Flaherty. I'm from Inishmore in the Aran Islands, and I worked with the Commissioners of Irish Lights from 1963 to 1988, and I've done a good few of the lighthouses on the coast of Ireland. The good stories will always come to mind. And I remember being on Éireann when those two fellas rowed across the Atlantic years ago. And when I was in Dublin, I used to go to the pictures a lot, for obvious reasons. And they were advertised in the cinema, those two fellas leaving wherever they left, Newfoundland or where, Ridgeway and Blythe, by the way. And on a bad afternoon, we had a boat out to Éireann, relief day, and myself and another fellow went for a walk around the island, and it was blowing strong enough now. It wasn't a very nice evening at all. And all of a sudden I spotted those just under the rock on the island. And I said to your man, there are two fellows that's coming across the Atlantic. And he's kind of, you're not well kind of style, you know. And he was a local lad who was doing temporary. Michael Keneally was his name. And we were talking Irish, the two of us, and we went up and reported it, called the Valencia Radio and told them that they were there and all the rest of it. And as it happened, they were the two. We shouted out to them to get out of where they were because this was a dangerous spot to be in, and the lifeboat came and took them away.
Galahad, lighthouse, Galahad, lighthouse.
While you were off saving lives, your colleague Gerald was risking his maintaining the lens.
The lens now, when you just look up there, you can see the lens revolving around. Those lens, just to give you an idea, they're weighing about 2 ton weight. And those lens are floating in a bath of mercury. During the nighttime, that light could extinguish for any reason. It could go on fire, a moth or an insect could just fly straight into the mantle and set the whole thing on fire. So the keeper had to extinguish that, set up a new burner and relight it, and then take away the old burner. It had to be stripped apart and scrupulously cleaned and brought back up and put as a standby. So the lens that you're looking at, they're a Fresnel lens or a Fresnel lens. They used to get very black and dirty with the oil, the exhaust fumes. So we used to have to clean those at least once every 2 weeks. One keeper would be on the outside and the other keeper would be on the inside. And we would polish those lens keep wiping them. We used to use vinegar and water to clean the dirt off them. And then whoever would be standing inside would have to keep moving around, because the magnification power of those lenses are so powerful that the sun, if it was a sunny day, shining back in through it would start burning your clothes. You'd smell your trousers starting to smoulder and you'd have to move. And automation did away with all of that. So what they do now is they leave the lens revolving all day long, and the sun hasn't got that opportunity to focus. If it did, in less than 1 minute, it would set the entire inside of the lens on fire.
Getting closer to the dusk is when the sound world changes and you might really feel that you're not alone. Al Hamilton remembers the strange sounds of night on his watch.
I have one. My first night on the Skellig's Rock as a supernumerary, being a flat, calm summer's night, and there was no sound of waves or whatever, and I heard this wailing noise, and I had no idea. It sounded to me like a banshee might sound like, but it seems there was a cave underneath the cove where the lighthouse was, and seals used to go in there and be calling in the night, and that was the wailing noise.
But it could be cosy on an abandoned rock, as Frank Pelly remembers.
My first night on a lighthouse was on Roncarrig, back in 1971, October 71. It was a foul night, and Roncarrig didn't have electricity at the time. It was the tea lamp down in the kitchen, and then you went up to bed at night time with a lamp. Now, I came from a town, I never had this experience before. Roncarrig is a very low-lying rock, and the shutters were pulled. Now, the shutters were made of 3-inch timber thick, and a fire in the room. And it was the cosiest feeling, hearing the sea bashing off the shutters on the window, yet you're in this room with fire, beautiful.
If the fog was down, the lighthouse beam was no good. If certain limits on the horizon were no longer visible, it was time to sound the foghorn. But you needed the foghorn to cooperate.
My first night as on watch on my own in a lighthouse was in Ballycotton Lighthouse. I was on the 10th of 2 watch. One of the duties was to keep a fog watch, and I was hoping fog would not roll in, because I was not confident about how to start the engines, the compressor engines, which were big, huge, old Ruston and Hornsby engines. And I was terrified of them. And lo and behold, at about 1 a.m. the fog did roll in. So I had to go out and start the engines, and they were started using compressed air. And whatever I did about starting the engines, it didn't work. So they didn't start with the compressed air, and now I had no more compressed air. But somebody said you could start them by hand. So I was 19 years old, I was 9 stone weakling, and I attempted to start a Ruston and Hornsby engine by hand, and I succeeded.
I don't believe it.
And I tried it subsequently when I was a bit bigger and stronger, and I couldn't do it. You have to swing it with a huge handle and get up enough momentum in the flywheel to put on full compression and have it fire, and you hope it fires, and it did.
Uh-huh. You maintained the lighthouse, made vital calls to the lifeboat, relayed information of the plight of mariners, the weather, visibility in the sea, and kept the dwelling immaculate for your fellow keepers. No wonder George Bernard Shaw said he could think of no other edifice constructed by man as altruistic as a lighthouse. Maybe, as a reward, you might climb the ladder to the lantern to gaze out at the elements, or to see the light working its magic at night.
We're exactly 174 feet over the sea at this minute. And looking down there, you would not think it. It can come up, and when a wave comes in, it'll just come crashing right straight over us. These are called a Fresnel lens, and these catch the light that's shining up and bend it out straight. When this was lighting, what you had shining out of here was a pillar of light about maybe 2 foot or 2.5 foot wide by 15 foot high. At night time, standing down underneath the lighthouse, you'd see these huge spokes of light as they sweep across the ocean, and this is the lens that make that happen.
A man stood at the heavenly gate. His face was scared and old. He stood before the man of fate for admission to the fold. "What have you done?" St. Peter asked, "to gain admission here?" "I've been a lighthouse keeper, sir, for many a weary year." The pearly gate swung open wide. St. Peter rang the bell. "Come in and take your seat, my son. You have had your share of hell."
Ha, 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 ha.